Okay, good morning, good vach. So we are picking up with our bi-weekly Minchas Asher Shir, although it's been a few weeks since last time. But glad to be back here in the valley to learn together. I figured we'd start with a Pesach topic this week. We'll probably cram one more Shir and hopefully another. And I guess we'll try to make that Pesach related as well. But it's not definitely not too early to start. We're within 30 days of the Yontif, and it's good to talk about the halachas all the time. So the ideas that I wanted to talk about, B'li Neder Mirz Hashem, today are based on two tshuvas in Minchas Asher, in Chelek Gimel, the third volume of his tshuvas. They are, broadly speaking, about sick people doing mitzvos, or doing mitzvos when it will cause someone to become sick. And in particular, I think hopefully we'll spend a little more time on the concept of eating matzah by the Seder for someone who has a gluten allergy, celiacs, or people of that nature who have trouble eating the mitzvos halayla of the Seder night. So the way to do that is we'll do it the way Rav Asher does it in two separate steps. The first one being the overall question of whether what a person has to risk in order to perform a mitzvah physically, you know, health and health. Then, secondly, to get into the specifics, the details of the case that we raised before and related cases if we can. So we'll hopefully, through the tshuvas, at least set guidelines which can help determine what the question is going forward and sometimes, in some cases, how to answer that question as well. So if you look in the very beginning of the printed tshuva over here, Rav Asher lists three separate questions that he's gotten regarding the Seder that relate to the thing we just introduced. He starts by saying, I didn't put on the sheet, but he praises, you know, Amchei Yisrael, that, you know, a person with celiac disease, a person with these other things we're going to talk about, is so worried that they want to keep the mitzvahs on Seder night that they're asking how and if it's possible to do so, and what they would have to risk. And they're Amcha Kedoshim, they're willing to risk certain things in order to be able to do the mitzvahs. So that's the praise that he offers. And here he gets into the three questions. So we look in Aleph, in the very beginning, Choli Tziliak, Shekol Achilas Chameshes Minei Dagan Pogas Bivriusam. So you have a person who's allergic to gluten, celiac. Celiac come in all shapes and forms. There are some cases of celiac where it's asymptomatic. There are cases where the symptoms are very minor. There are cases where the symptoms are more major, meaning minor might be a stomachache and a headache, and major might be, you know, being out from work for a week or 2 weeks because it has such an impact on them. And there are extreme cases, which I'm not, you know, aware of experientially or having met anyone like this and didn't even know except for the tshuva, but I didn't do that much research. Rabbi Rav Asher Weiss claims that he knows some patients who say the doctors say there's a far-off chance it could have long-term impact if they eat gluten inappropriately, and long-term impact even on fertility in some cases. Some things that sound so wild and so wide-ranging, but I'm not sure if we know everything about this condition, and therefore some of the effects are maybe speculative. But again, it does cause a certain pointed issues within the person who consumes the gluten product. So a celiac who wants to eat matzah by the Seder is number one. Beis, the second one, is b'machlos kaved shonos. Someone who has, you know, issues with their organs, their what's for alcohol, their liver, right? Your liver is impacted by alcohol. And this person has a disease within their liver that they can't consume alcohol. Or he says even in some cases the person has mono. Drinking is detrimental for that disease. Okay, so in such cases a person has to hold back. They're not allowed to drink any wine or any alcoholic product. And the question is, on Seder night, there certainly is a lot of alcoholic content that needs to be consumed because we have to have 4 cups of wine. So if you're having a dalad kosos, you're going to have an issue if you can't usually consume alcohol. So what should you do in that situation? Now, Asher Weiss mentions over here, he says it as if it's like he just shakes it out of his sleeve, but this would be a whole nother shir. He says, of course you could be yotze on Seder night with grape juice. That is a whole nother discussion. The question of dalad kosos, you know, kiddush and dalad kosos separately, by dalad kosos, you not only have to drink wine and make your Seder on wine as a kosher bracha, but we also have this mitzvah and this concept that we have to express cheres, freedom, through the mitzvahs of the Seder. So one of the ways you express chayrus is by drinking a nice cup of wine. Okay, 4 nice cups of wine over the course of the Seder. Now the question is, what expresses chayrus better? Drinking alcoholic beverages or drinking things that you enjoy? So for many people, those two overlap and it's fine. They like wine, they like good wine, like bad wine, whatever, they like wine. And they can drink 4 cups and be happy about it, and that definitely expresses chayrus. But there are certain individuals who might want to feel good on the Seder night and feel chayrus, but they don't want to sit there drinking 4 cups of wine. it hurts them, it bothers them, or just they don't like the taste, whatever the case might be. It makes them nauseous, stomach ache, whatever it is. So in those cases, are they allowed to drink grape juice? Well, it has the advantage of being delicious. I don't know if anyone disagrees with that, but grape juice is absolutely delicious. Adults aren't allowed to admit it, so I'll say it for you. Grape juice is delicious. So it does express freedom in that way. It makes me feel good to drink grape juice. However, it's not alcoholic, and therefore it doesn't express freedom in that more objective way of having the alcoholic content. So that is a major discussion the postgame have argued about for many years. Rabbi Asher Weiss just says, oh yeah, by the way, it's totally okay to have grape juice. That would solve the issue for the person who can't have alcoholic beverages. However, he says some people can't have grape juice for other reasons. It's very high in sugar content. So they make low sugar grape juice, but whatever. There's a lot of people who can't have a drink that's so high in sugar, so maybe you don't have an option to have grape juice or wine in such a case. So he's been asked those questions, he says. And thirdly, he says an elderly person who's not able, I guess it didn't have to be elderly, in this case it was, but it could be a person who just has a digestive issue, where eating lettuce is not good for their digestive tract, it's not helpful for their digestive system, it hurts them, and therefore they can't really eat lettuce. On the other hand, you know, using chrein for maror, aside from being questionable in a whole nother shiur as well, whether chrein horseradish is okay for maror, assuming it is, that's also problematic. Eating something so spicy, so sharp, is hard for their digestive system as well. So in these three instances, just three cases all on Seder night. Of course, this applies in so many other areas of halacha that you have to worry about these things. But just three areas of the Seder night, people want to know, you know, how sick do I have to get in order to be mekayim the mitzvah of mitzvos of the Seder night. So Rabbi Asher Weiss starts by just quoting, there are gemaras about this. The problem is the Gemaras seem to be against each other. But there are Gemaras about this, and we should start with the Gemaras. So if you look in the second paragraph, he says, if you look in the Gemara in Sukkah, the Gemara in Sukkah tells us a very, very famous idea, that patra min ha-sukkah, that someone who is, uncomfortable, who is shtered, as they say in Yiddish, from sitting in the Sukkah, so that's going to patra him, it's going to exempt him from sitting in the Sukkah. Meaning, if a person's sitting in the Sukkah and it's, 95 degrees outside, so if they're in Los Angeles and it's raining on Sukkot, it's not a problem because all the locals will just say, no, it's not raining. I promise it's not raining because they get so embarrassed that it's raining and they have to tell me that it never rained until I got here. Okay, it's another schmooze for another time. But if you're sitting there, it's a heat wave, it's 150 degrees, or it's raining and you're willing to admit it, so then you're a mitzdayer, patur min ha-sukkah, and you have to go inside. There's no mitzvah to sit in the sukkah in that situation. Good, good, good. So that's the first area of halacha that we have a gemara about. The second one is the gemara Nedarim, a famous gemara because it's kind of humorous in a certain way. We shouldn't make fun, but it's a little humorous. Rabbi Yehuda bar Ilai, it says, would drink wine for the dalet kosos. That's the mitzvah's ha-layla. He would do that for the dalet kosos. And then it says that he would have a headache from Pesach until Shavuos. It's a good reminder for counting Sfira. But he would have a headache every single day from Pesach till Shavuos because the wine impacted him so negatively that it hurt him until Shavuos. And the Yerushalmi has the same story about Rabbi Yonah. So those two Gemaras, one says Mitzdayer Pater Min HaSukkah, one says that the person drinks wine even though it's going to hurt them. So it turns out the Shulchan Aruch seems to pass. And like the second one, you look in the bold here in this paragraph, Umikan Lamdu in the Shulchan Aruch, Nechus Pesach, She'af Misha Yain Maziko. Even someone who the wine's going to be detrimental to him, it's going to have a detrimental effect, it's going to hurt him, it's going to cause him some harm, Oshu is Soneas Shias Yain, or he doesn't really appreciate the taste of wine, Sarich Litchok Atzmo Kedei Lakayim Mitzvah Zo. He has to push himself. He has to exert himself, even though it's going to cause some pain, cause some discomfort. He has to go ahead and push himself to drink the wine on the Seder night. That just seems to go directly with the Gemara Nedarim that we quoted. That Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yonah and the Yerushalmi, they drank wine on the Seder night, and they had Pesach from Pesach till Shavuos. Okay. Ach be'emes, in the next paragraph, which is basically all bold. Ach be'emes, this is your point. Ach be'emes nira, the ain't possessed stira cloud. There's no contradiction between these two gemaras. We're talking about two very different areas of halacha over here. This is important to point out, because even though it seemed obvious to you, and I think it was to me also, not every posek thought this was so obvious. A lot of the poskim assumed you could transfer from one area of halacha but to another. But he says there's no stira here. D'lo patres ha-mitzdar mi-mitzah sukkah. Why is a mitzdar patur min ha-sukkah? It's machlok as you've shown him, but what do we assume? Why is a mitzdayer patur min ha-sukkah? Someone who's uncomfortable in a sukkah. Why are they exempt from sitting there? Because the mitzvah of sukkah is to do what? Teishvu ke'ein taduru, which means that you have to sit in such a way. Basukos teishvu shivas yamim kol azrach b'Yisrael yeshvu basukos. You have to sit ke'ein taduru, like you usually do your dira. The way your house is, that's how your sukkah should be. You bring the nice dishes in, you hang the same pictures in your house, you do all these things, you make the sukkah the same way as your house. So too your yeshiva. The way you sit in sukkah should be the way you sit in your house. That's what Rav Shechter always points out. That's the minhag Yisrael to talk lashon hara in the sukkah. We do it in the house, so we should talk lashon hara in the sukkah as well. You got to be mekayim, teishvu ke'ein taduru. The real answer. answer is that you shouldn't talk in the house or in the sukkah. But once you're in the sukkah, so we got to live the way we live in the house. Teishu king taduru. So teishu king taduru. If it was raining in your house, you would move out. You'd move out. You wouldn't tolerate if there was no ceiling and the rain was pouring in. And you would move out. You wouldn't stay in such a house. So too, when it comes to a sukkah, you won't stay in the sukkah if it's raining. Mitzdayer pater min sukkah. But that's a mitzvah. That's about mitzvah sukkah. The pasuk says teishu basukos, teishu shivas yamin kol zach b'sirol yeshivu basukos, teishu kein taduru. But not mitzvahs yayin aleil seder. Not mitzvahs anything else. Not mitzvahs tefillin. The Torah doesn't say that you have to do those things in a comfortable way. So maybe by sukkah, when a person's uncomfortable, they're exempt, they're pater. When it comes to other mitzvahs, aval b'shar kol mitzvahs, ha-Torah, ha-mitzdar chayiv, b'im mitzvahs d'oraisa, b'im mitzvahs d'rabbanan, whether it's biblical, whether it's rabbinic, a person's a little bit uncomfortable, so what? You got to do the mitzvah. You don't have a rule of mitzdar by other mitzvahs. Yeah. We'll come back to that Bli Nether. We'll come back to the Bli Nether. Meaning maybe there's an added element by the Seder itself. Correct. We'll come back to that Bli Nether. What do you mean? What?
One of the things you have to eat at the Seder.
Okay.
Is.
But we're not. What happens to be. We're not talking about the Karban Pesach. It happens to be, but.
But the sukkah doesn't substitute.
Okay. Yeah. But and carbon's a mitzvah and a sukkah's a mitzvah. I don't know if there's any real difference in those two. One is animal meat and one is leaves. But I'm saying they're both mitzvahs. I don't think they're different in this way. But either way, we're not talking about Karban Pesach because we don't have it. You know, halacha l'maisa for us. But okay. Either way, Rav Schechter, it was last year, I think, they published a sefer called Ateres Tzvi, which is a sefer in honor of Rav Schechter, my rabbi, the Rashi Ben Wayu, which includes Divrei Torah from many of his students on the Parshios. And the first five Divrei Torah are from Rav Schechter himself, things that weren't published on other places that were written up and put into this sefer. So in there he has an essay, we'll Bli Nether, we'll come back to it, it's related to something else we're going to talk about, but he has an essay in there, they're all very, very gishmak, very interesting, but he points out this din of mitzdar patur min sukkah, and he says it's obvious, that mitzdar patur min sukkah applies to sukkah. It doesn't apply to other mitzvos. And you can't transfer the fact that an uncomfortable person doesn't sit in sukkah to any other mitzvah, not the Pesach night, not any other time of the year. He says, in fact, that, again, I don't know who the Rav was, or I never heard the story from Baal Peh. You usually get more details that way. But he wrote in this piece that Rav Soloveitchik reported that back in the day, there was a certain reform rabbi in America who wrote a tshuva. He wrote a response to the tshuva, is in quotation marks in Rav Schechter's write-up. He wrote a tshuva, a responsum, where he tried to prove that we know by sukkah, we have a pasuk which says, teishvin kandir, which teaches you mitzdar patam na sukkah. And so many mitzvahs are so difficult to keep nowadays. They're so uncomfortable to keep the mitzvahs. Now, living in America, it's very difficult to keep the mitzvahs of the Torah. So mitzdar patam mikola mitzvahs. If you're mitzdar, if you're uncomfortable, you don't have to keep any mitzvahs. Interesting logic over there. That was back in the day when they were trying to write tshuvas, at least. They were at least trying to write tshuvas about these things. Now, I don't think you need to say mitzdar patam na sukkah. You just do whatever you want. But, I don't know. A certain reform rabbi, I don't know. So I recall a story in the article biography of Rav Chaim Moser Grudzinski. I love this story. That it was Rav Chaim Moser Grudzinski was living in Europe, it was freezing, and someone came over on it's kind of like here. I agree, it's freezing. So someone came over on Sukkot to visit him, and Rav Chaim Moser was elderly. He wasn't well, and he came out to sit in the sukkah to sit with the guy. Now, he wasn't sitting in the sukkah when the guy came because it was freezing outside, and mitzdar patam in a sukkah. Rav Chaim Moser Grudzinski doesn't have to sit in the sukkah when it's freezing. The other person was younger and healthier, and the cold didn't bother him as much, so he sat outside. But when the guest came, Rav Chaim Moser came out to sit with him in the sukkah. So the guest said to him, "What are you doing? Mitzdar patam in a sukkah. You shouldn't sit out here, you should sit inside." So Rav Chaim Moser responded, "You're right. Mitzdar patam in a sukkah, but a mitzdar is not patam from the mitzvah of Hachnas Zorchim. And I have a mitzvah to greet you in the sukkah now that you're here visiting me. So mitzdar doesn't pater me from the other sukkah, the other mitzvah. So I guess Rav Chaim Moser disagreed with this reform rabbi. I don't know. But that's what it seems. Okay. If you look in the next paragraph here in Rav Asher Weiss's tshuva, so he writes, Amnon lagabe choli, kasvu rabbi min anachronim. So now we have these two gemaras. We're saying, nah, there's a difference here. Sukkah is one thing, and all other mitzvos, so you're not going to be pater from. And that explains why Seder night, you have to drink the four cups of wine. Amnon lagabe choli. That all comes to like a discomfort. When it actually comes down to a choli, a sickness that's going to develop, kasvu rabbi min anachronim. Rav Asher Weiss himself quotes the Avni Nezer, the Binyan Shlomo, and the Chelkas Yoav, but many achronim write that shepater. There is actually an exemption. If a person is going to get sick from mitzvos, there is an exemption. Ve'ein din chole kedina mitzdair. Being sick is different than being uncomfortable. It's raining, it's cold, you're uncomfortable, go inside. You're uncomfortable putting on tefillin? Too bad, you gotta put on tefillin. You're uncomfortable, you know, keeping Shabbos? Too bad, you gotta keep Shabbos. If something's gonna make you sick, maybe that's a different question. If something's gonna make you sick, maybe it's a different question. Ve'ein ha'adam chayiv l'kayim es ha'mitzvos kasher yechla al yadan. If the mitzvos are going to make a person sick, if they're gonna cause them to fall ill, they don't have to keep that particular mitzvah. We're talking about mitzvah's essay, positive commandments. V'lamdu alacha zo kal v'chom me'osaos mamon. There's a halacha. Rav Asher quotes some of the Ma'amakomas here, not all, but there's a halacha that we know that if a person only gives up their life, in Yiddishkeit we only believe in giving up your life for three major averos, and all other averos in major situations. So three major averos, the big three that we know of, and then other mitzvos, if it's a shas hashmad, if there's a gzera that they're trying to ruin our religion, or if it's bifarhesi, it's in public, and everyone's going to know, 10 Jewish people plus are going to know about your avera. In those cases, a person does have to risk their life for all mitzvos, that's true. But generally speaking, the rule is what the Torah says, v'chai bohem, v'lo sheyamas bohem, that we have to live through mitzvos, not die for mitzvos. Usually Torah is supposed to give us life, not death. It's a very, very, very rare exception that a person has to give up their life for Kiddush Hashem. So that's the starting point. Then when it comes to giving up money, that's a whole other question. So the poskim assume it's a, you know, how this gets off the ground is a little bit of a story from a Gemara in Ksubis and Daf Nun, and then the Rishonim have to apply it to other cases, but let's just say what the poskim say when you go to the Ramah. So there's basically a distinction, the Shulchan Aruch in Yoredeya, and something I always forget which siman is, Kufn and Zayin, that area in Yoredeya where Hilchos Kiddush Shem is, and in Tafresh Nun Vav in Hilchos Sukkah. So the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah, talk about the following two possibilities. A person is saying that they are going to have to give up all of their money in order to not violate a Avera, not violate a mitzvah. So there's a distinction. When it comes to violating averos, let's say someone is saying, do this avera or else it's going to cost you X amount of money and it's all your money or it's a lot of your money. So we assume, im yitin ishes kol hom beso bi'ahava bozia bozu lo, that if a person is challenged, that they have to avoid doing an avera or give up all of their cash, they have to give up everything. They have to be mevazvein hon rav. They have to give up all of their kol hon beso, all of the money they have, in order not to violate an iser, in order not to violate an avera. It's an amazing thing. On the bottom of the page of Shulchan Aruch, they have a discussion whether it applies to mitzvahs derabanan as well. It's an incredible thing. But a person has to give up their livelihood in order to avoid doing an iser, avoid doing an avera. However, when it comes to mitzvos, that's not the rule, meaning positive mitzvos. When it comes to positive mitzvos, a person does not have to spend all their money on a lulav. A person does not have to spend all their money on any mitzvah. A person has to spend up to a chomesh, up to a fifth of their money, 20% of their assets in performing mitzvos. There's other mitzvot, there's other dinim like hiddur mitzvah, things like that. But a person has to spend all of their, only a fifth, 20% of their money in order to be mekayim mitzvah. So again, to avoid violating an iser, all your money. But to actually perform a mitzvah, that's only a fifth. That's a fifth, 20% of your money. Either way, so when it comes to a positive mitzvah, you're only required to give up so much. So what about getting sick? So some of the posts can say, cheshbon, it depends. If you're so sick that you would spend 20% of your money to get better, that's like you're giving up that much money, and therefore you don't have to do that for a mitzvah. You don't have to sacrifice that for a mitzvah. Some people are very specific like that. But a lot of the posts can say what Rav Asher Weiss here says, which is basically just a straight kal v'chomer. If you don't have to give up all your money in order to do a mitzvah, in order to eat matzah, you wouldn't have to spend all of your money. So then for sure, you don't have to get sick in order to eat matzah. We'll talk about soon how dalakosis might be different. You may have to give up a lot more money for dalakosis, but in general, for mitzvahs, you don't have to give up all your money, so you certainly don't have to get yourself sick over the mitzvahs either. So Rashi Weiss says, a lot of the poskim do say that. Rav Shechter, in that same piece, quotes from Rav Moshe Feinstein, in Igros Moshen, Chelek Aleph Arachayim, in Simon Kuf Ayin Beis, where Moshe says the same idea, that the person doesn't have to give up all their money, so certainly they don't have to give up their health in order to be mekayim mitzvos. So that would start to point in a direction, in terms of the mitzvos and Seder night, and in general, that you don't have to get sick in order to keep the mitzvos. Now, Basher points out over here that there's room to dingzach, as they say on this approach. There's room to knock it off a little bit, because there's a difference. At the end of the day, when it comes to giving up your money, so the reason why you don't have to give up all of your money, Rashi tells us this, the Gemara really says this, when you give up all your money for a mitzvah, what's going to happen? Now you're going to rely on someone else. They're going to give them their money to take care of you. Then they're going to it's going to be an endless cycle of everyone giving up their money and losing their money and starting again. It's a vicious cycle. So we say, no, there's a certain amount you have to spend and not more. You're not going to throw the whole society into poverty. That applies to money. It doesn't really apply to sickness. You know, if a person's going to be getting major headaches or stomach aches or whatever, be out of work for a week through doing mitzvahs, it doesn't really cause anyone else any issues. It's not going to be an endless cycle. But even so, Rav Asher thinks the svara is, the logic is, like those poskim say, that if it's going to make a person sick, that's as valuable to a person as their 20% of their assets. And so you don't have to do that. You don't have to risk that in order to perform mitzvahs. If you keep reading in the Rosh Hashanah over here, before the Oz Beis, Amna me'idach kisa kasav b'shut ma'am shik. The ma'am shik, ma'am shik, writes, in Adam Pater Minamitzis El Makam Sakana Bavad. So he disagrees. He thinks that the only extent of sickness which causes a person to have an exemption from mitzvos is if they're actually going to be endangered. If their life is in danger, then they're going to have the ptur, the exemption of chola sheyesh bo sakana. But other than that, just becoming a little bit sick is not enough to pater from a mitzvah. So you do have machlokas over here, but you hear what Rosh is saying, right? If a person wouldn't have to give up 20% of their money, they also don't have to give up their week of functioning normally, their stomach feeling good, whatever the case might be in terms of being a chola sheyesh bo sakana. Maybe a little bit of discomfort is different. We'll come back to that. But getting sick wouldn't be within the requirements of doing a mitzvah. If you look in Beis, Rabbi Asher continues with an interesting source that seems to come back to Sukkah, but differently. Maybe you could disagree. Maybe you could prove that someone who's going to be sick is not exempt from mitzvahs. Why? Because the Mishnah tells us, cholin umisham shehen, ill people and those who are taking care of them are paturim min hasukkah. They're pater from Sukkah. Now, what does that mean? That they're that? Why does that araya? Why does that prove anything? So apparently, it shows that the chola is exempt from the mitzvah of sukkah, and the ritva says over here that it's not a dichloy. This is not pushing off the mitzvah of sukkah. Rather, kachia mitzvah ve'in kan dechia she'in dichloy b'mitzvos mishum meichushin v'choli ela b'she'efshar lekaimam. He says the idea over here is that since they are sick, or since you are taking care of the sick person, you can't possibly sit in sukkah properly. You can't really sit in sukkah and function properly if you're sick. And so maybe that's another proof that we have that by mitzvos, that if you're sick, you don't have to do the mitzvos. However, Rabbi Asher says, very obviously, there's a difference over here, but it's an important fundamental difference. He says, in that case, what's the case? This person has, I don't know, has the flu, whatever, I don't know. He has the flu, so he's bedridden with the flu. And he has an aide who's a Jewish person who's an aide who's helping him, taking care of them. Fine. So now they're stuck in bed, and they don't have to go into sukkah because they're sick. Okay, what does that have to do with our case? Our case is I'm a fully healthy person. I'm fully functioning. I could sit in sukkah. I could sit at the seder. I could eat matzah. But if I do those things, I'm going to become sick. If I eat the matzah, it's going to make me sick. That's a different question entirely. It could be that someone who is already sick does not have to perform mitzvahs because it exacerbates the situation, it's uncomfortable, or it's just impossible. It gets in the way of keeping the mitzvah. But when it comes to a person who's fully healthy and doing the mitzvah will cause him discomfort, will cause him a little bit of illness, who says there's a connection over here? Who says there's a comparison? Who says that proves that if you're going to become sick, we would be makil as well? So Rav Asher says you can't really bring a proof one way or the other from this din either. There's another Gemara that he quotes. If you look, you see how there's like a smaller font, and then right after that there's another paragraph that doesn't have any bold in it. So there's a Gemara in Chulin, a very interesting Gemara about Rav Nosson taking a trip, and he goes to a town, and there was a certain, there was a case where a person was, the siblings all died after the Bris Milah Nebuch, and the last kid was born, and also looked like he had the issue, and he said, wait a little bit till such and such happens, you'll get this sign, it'll be healthy. And they waited, and they mild the baby, and the baby was healthy, and they named it Nosson, and then they named everyone in the town Nosson after this Rav Nosson of Bavli. They named everyone after this Rabbi Nosson, and Rabbi Nosson of Bavli was the baby. So, interesting story. So, Rashi there points out that you couldn't do the Mila before you found out that the kid was healthy, because ain't any mitzvahs, ain't l'cha davar ha'omi b'fnei pikuach nefesh. If there's a risk to a person's life, we never do mitzvahs if it's going to be a risk to a person's life. Rav Asher here points out that if you look at Rav Asher and the Gemara, it sounds like, okay, risk to life means you don't do mitzvahs, but anything less than that, maybe you would do the mitzvahs. So maybe if this kid was going to get a little sick from the bris milah, but he'd be okay. He wouldn't, chas v'shalom, die from the bris milah. So then maybe we would do the bris. Meaning it sounds like from Rashi, maybe the distinction is only when it's life and death. When it's just a sickness, you would perform the mitzvah. However, Rav Asher gives a few different reasons why that's not a good raya from the Gemara. One of them is that the whole idea of bris milah in general demands pain and demands a little bit of sickness. The baby's out of commission for, what we assume halachically, you know, 3 days is like the highest point of the pain. But there's bandages, there's creams, there's medicine, there's checkups from the doctor and the mile. This is an operation. So bris milah demands a certain level of, you know, of risk of health. Not risk, Rahman al-Sana, of death, but risk of health is demanded in a bris milah. So you can't prove from here to any other mitzvah. Maybe bris milah is unique, is different, in that it demands that sense of sacrifice of their health. The Abin Ezer made an interesting point related to this regarding a similar case, I guess, where there was a baby who they were worried, there was a concern, the doctors had a concern, that if they would do the bris milah, so he might be okay-ish, but he'd have a mum, he'd have some sort of a defect that would develop that would last the rest of his life, which is a much more chumash shaila. It's not just, you know, he'll be sick for a few days. It's now I'm going to have this deformity or whatever it might be for the rest of my life. And the Abin Ezer there is where he applies this idea where he says that's too much. To make the kid give up so much for the rest of his life and do the milah now as opposed to later, or I don't know what the other options are, to not do it at all, I'm not sure. But he doesn't have to give up 20% of his money, and he has to give up his, I'm just making it up, Eyesight? No, it can't be. It can't be that he has to give up something so serious for the rest of his life for the mitzvah. So there, he makes that application to the mitzvah of Bris Milah. Rav Shechter just quotes from Acheshes, who says, maybe it depends. If Bris Milah, if we're talking about the father's obligation, so the father has an obligation, but once the kid's old enough, the kid's obligation. When the kid's older, if he doesn't do a Bris Milah, he's going to get a Chiv Karis. It's a Chiv Karis. Now we're not talking about a regular mitzvah essay. It's a higher level mitzvah essay at this point. Maybe it's even got a little bit of an isser to it. And so maybe it's a different question entirely than all other mitzvahs. So Bris Milah is like, it's the, what's the term? Red herring? Right? Is that the right term?
It's an outlier.
Yeah, but that doesn't involve fish. I want something that involves fish. Okay, or fleishik. Black sheep, fine. Black sheep works. I'll do fleish. So it's not the end. Close. So it's like a black sheep. It's the exception to the rule. It's the exception to the rule. So it's not going to be a good proof in either direction. If you look at Oz Gimel over here, Rav Asher Weiss writes, Halacha l'maisa, v'nira ikir l'halacha, v'legabe sakanas eiver, o kol nezeg refui she'en lo mazur, v'alu lios bilti hafich, v'adai eno chayev lachlos l'kai mitzvah esei. So says Rav Asher Weiss, that if a person is going to get so sick, that it's going to be lasting, that it's going to be impactful, it's going to risk one of his limbs, anything very serious, very real, even if it's going to last short, or if it's something that's not as major but will be a lifetime issue that can't be reversed, that he thinks is not something a person has to risk themselves for in terms of being the kind of mitzvah. And in fact, he says that a person would be wrong to do so. If you don't have to, you're not allowed to. The Gemara Bava Kama tells us that a person is not allowed to be chovel ba'atzmo. They can't, Rahman Salam, cut off a limb. Even you don't have bilus over your body. Judaism doesn't believe in that we have a right to our body. It's a Ribbono Shel Olam's body. We have to make decisions. We have to take care of the body he gave us, and we have to make proper decisions consulting doctors and getting good advice. But we're not the owners of our body. We're renting our bodies. We're using our bodies for the Torah and Mitzvah Hashem puts in this world for, but it's not ours to make decisions about. So the Gemara says, an example of that is that a person can't decide to harm themselves. You're not allowed to hurt yourself. That's usher. So the Gemara never says, but for mitzvahs you can. No, you're not allowed to hurt yourself. That's a rule. You're not allowed to do that. So if it's going to be a serious cause of harm, something that's going to be a defect that lasts, something that's going to be irreversible, that you certainly would not be chayiv to do. And therefore, it would be prohibited to volunteer to do such a mitzvah. That wouldn't be like a midas chasidus. It wouldn't be a chumrah. It would be a bad thing to do. In fact, aval, here at the end of Gimel, before the Dalet, aval b'tsar be'alma, you're going to get a headache. Or you're going to get a cold. You sit in the sukkah, it's a little bit cold, not so cold. You're going to get the sniffles. Okay, so you'll be okay. You know, it's like you'll have a little bit of a cold and it's no big deal. So then maybe you don't have to, but maybe there's a midas chasidus, a nice chumrah to try to keep those mitzvos. Or in some cases, you might even be obligated to do so, depending on how minor that illness is. So this is a part of the hagdara over here. Again, I told you we're going to spend a lot of time in Rav Asher on categories. So two categories so far are, I guess we could do more than two. Cholesh yesh bo sakana, someone's going to lose their life, rachman al salan, no mitzvos, except for very rare instances, no mitzvos. Someone's going to become so sick that it's damaging, it's hurtful for the rest of their life, or even for a short time, but a very serious issue, no mitzvah and you shouldn't do it, right? No mitzvah and you shouldn't do it. What if it's going to be just a headache? Okay, then you hear. Then there's you're sick. It certainly matters. You have the sniffles. It matters. A cold matters. But you don't have to maybe make her a din, but it's okay to volunteer. And maybe it's even nice to volunteer to do the mitzvah. I don't know. I talk for myself here. I've told you in the past I don't like wine so much. Seder night when I have, I don't have dry wine the whole for four cups. I have Rashi wine, that type of stuff, the sweet Kiddush wine. So even that, I can handle the first cup, but not out of alcohol content. It gives me a stomachache. I don't know, to drink that much sweet wine, it's like it's very annoying. So I have a stomachache when I go to sleep, and I wake up and I don't have a stomachache, right? As I get older, that time frame when that changes a little bit, but, you know, it's not a big deal. A couple of hours feeling not so well is not a big deal. I'm willing to take that on myself as a chumrah on Pesach night. It's not such a big deal. But if a person's going to have a stomachache for a week and a half, or they're going to be in bed for the rest of Pesach, so that's something to consider. And in some cases, that might even be usher, but again, it's certainly not something that a person would have to do in order to make kind of mitzvahs. I guess that Rav Yonah or Rav Yehuda in the Gemara Nedarim and the Yerushalmi and Pesachim felt that a headache for 49 days wasn't that big of a deal. I guess maybe he had young children. He have the same issue. I have a headache for 365 days. So it's not such a big deal. You can live with it. So he had a headache. No, he got over it. He had a headache, but it was worth having the Dalet Kosas on Seder night. Okay. The question he deals with in Osvav, no bold over there, but is, you know, if a person is pater, is he allowed to make a mitzvah? Meaning, let's say you decide, I am pater from eating matzah, I am pater from drinking the dalet kosos, but it's allowed. I'm allowed to do it, and I'm going to do it on the Seder night. So are you allowed to make a bracha? Asher kiddushanu b'mitzvosa v'tzivanu? Are you commanded? You're not really commanded, you're pater. So is there any other example where you could say you see someone making a bracha even though they're pater, exempt?
Yeah,
Women.
Not on Pesach night. Matzah, they're chayiv to eat. But sitting in sukkah, taking a lulav, they're not required. It's a mitzvah zeh shel zman grama. It's a time-bound mitzvah. And yet, Ashkenazi women do make a bracha, correct? It's a machlokas in the Rishonim, a machlokas in Chachmei Sfard versus Chachmei Ashkenaz, and we make brachas. So that's a regular case where a woman, she's chayiv in Torah and mitzvot. The Torah just says you don't have to do this one, but she's chayiv overall in Torah and mitzvot. So she's allowed to say tzivanu. That's what Moshe Feinstein explains it. She's allowed to say tzivanu. She's commanded in lulav. Elamai, the Torah says you don't have to keep lulav, but she's commanded in all 613 mitzvot with some exemptions that she doesn't have to keep them. If she volunteers, she's doing latzivoy. She's doing something that she's overall commanded in. And this guy is no worse than that. This guy, male or female, is not commanded to keep matzah or wine right now because they're going to get a little bit sick and they choose to do so, they'd like to do so, within reason they're allowed to. So they make a shirk of tzivanu. And he says it's a kavah chomer. In the case of an isha, she's never chayiv in this mitzvah and yet she volunteers. In the case of this person, he's always chayiv in this mitzvah and he's volunteering to keep it this year as well. So it's obvious, he thinks. I mean, he's a little bit back and forth about it, but he thinks it's obvious that in such a case, a person would be able to make the bracha. He does have a pushback, but he falls out on that side. So if you look at the last part of this tshuva, post Zion, you'll see he sums it up. There's four categories. One, cholesh yesh b'zakana, all bets are off, no mitzvos. Two, a person's going to have a serious change to their body that's irreversible. You're not even allowed to be machmer. It's aser to be machmer. You can't do the mitzvah. Three, you're going to become sick. Achola she'enbo sakana, so you're going to be stuck in bed, you're going to get the cold or whatever, like a fever or something, a stomach ache, and it's going to hurt you a little bit. You don't have to keep the mitzvah, but if you do, if you choose to, it's okay, and you could even make a bracha. And fourth, tsar ba'alma, a little headache, a little stomach ache before you go to sleep Seder night. No, you're chayiv doing the mitzvah. That's called mitzvah. Mitzvah is pater min asukah, but it's not pater from any other mitzvos, unlike the reform rabbi that we quoted earlier in the shir. Okay. Now, the difference between gimel and dalet, right? Cholashin bosakana and sar ba'alma, that can be a very thin line, correct? That could be very, very difficult to determine. Just as an example, in that same piece that Rav Schechter wrote in that I told you from before, that we printed in that sefer, so he points this out. There's a kav dak, a very thin line between someone who's sick and someone who's just mitzdayer, just has a little bit of a discomfort. And he gives an example. He wrote this right after COVID, or like kind of when the yeshiva, I was in the basement. So the yeshiva had opened, but it was, we might have still been wearing masks. I don't remember. I think we were still wearing masks. So it was in the height of, you know, dealing with COVID, I was at least. So he wrote that there are some people who, when they get COVID, they lose their taste. They lose their taste. So losing your taste is a problem Seder night. Why? You have to eat matzah and maror. Matzah, the Gemara assumes you have to have a tam of the matzah. We'll see. And maror, we assume you also have to have a tam of the matzah. Now, there's a distinction. When it comes to matzah, the matzah has to have taste, but the person doesn't necessarily have to taste the matzah. When it comes to maror, the maror has to have taste, and you have to be able to taste it, which means if you just swallow maror whole, without biting, without putting on your taste buds, you wouldn't be yotzei the mitzvah of maror, because you have to taste the bitterness. That's the point of the mitzvah, to taste the bitterness of the slavery. So you have to taste the maror when it goes down. By the way, Rav Asher writes about this idea as well, about COVID. Rav Asher published after COVID all of his tshuvas that he wrote on Corona. It's called Minchas Asher Amageva Sakarona or whatever. It's like a fat volume with all the tshuvas. It's unbelievable that he was writing over those 2 years that he wrote. So one of them is on this, Marah and Matzah, by the Seder, when a person lost their taste. But Rav Shechter talks about a different case. Sometimes you have a person who lost their taste. Other times you have a person who, and there are medical terms for both of these, someone could explain them, could remind me of them. Sometimes you have a case where a person used to like coffee, and they got COVID, and now when they drink coffee, they taste like metal in their mouth for a day, or a week, or 2 weeks. It takes time for the taste to go away. It's like an unbelievable thing that we weren't used to experiencing. So some people's taste buds flipped. That good became bad, bad became good. So let's say such a person who's going to eat lettuce Seder night, or going to eat matzah Seder night, and they're going to taste this disgusting taste in their mouth for the next 3 days, 4 days, 5 days, however long it is. So is such a person going to be chayiv in the mitzvah of matzah and the mitzvah of marah? So Rav Shechter suggests that even though a mitzdayer is chayiv in all mitzvos, it could be that even though it's a small discomfort, it's going to last for days. It's really disruptive to a person's life. So then maybe there's room to discuss that that's not considered a mitzdayer anymore. That's already considered like a chola. This is his way of explaining the thin line. Meaning you and I would say, okay, so you'll have a bad taste in your mouth for a few days. You know, I have a bad taste in my mouth after half the people I interact with. It's not a big deal. You get over it, right? You have a bad taste in your mouth, you'll be okay. So Rav Shechter, yeah, if you eat matzah and it doesn't taste so good, fine. That's a risk you need to take for the mitzvah. But to deal with that for a week, to have that taste in your mouth for a week, to be so disruptive to your schedule and your life for so long, maybe that's not mitzta'er, maybe that's chola. So here's where you're going to have that question of, are you chayiv or are you pater, make your adin? And it's going to be a very thin line. Again, each case is going to have its own shailas. I don't know if people are experiencing this anymore, even when we do get COVID nowadays, right? People don't really have the taste thing as much anymore in general. I don't know. Maybe it does exist, so I think it's not so much anymore in the new whatever variants. Yeah, in the next tshuva over here, you have Chil Gimel, Simen Mem Gimel, it's the very next tshuva in the Sefer. So he talks about the our specific case that we opened up with, Bidvar Cholat Tziliak. So again, there's a wide range of impact and effect that a person can have from being a celiac, but the general rule is that they can't eat the five grains, the gluten products that from which we make bread, and we make hamotzian, and from which mitzvah matzah must be made from. This is not an issue that comes up only Seder night. What about every single week by Kiddush? Shabbos morning, you go to a Kiddush, you need to have Kiddush Makom Suda, which means that you need to make Kiddush in the same place that you're going to eat. Or the other way to say is you need to eat in the same place you're making Kiddush. But either way, you need to combine eating and Kiddush, correct? So we assume generally that you need to have Hamotzi, or some people are making on Mizonos to have like cake or cookies or something like that, or herring with crackers. So what does a celiac, a gluten-free person, do at a Kiddush like that? So nowadays, they probably have gluten-free options. A gluten-free cake, gluten-free cookies, something like that. But let's say you're not at such a contemporary Kiddush. You're at an old Hamish Kiddush where there's a cholent and deli roll and poppers and herring, and that's really just about it. There's not anything else for you. There's no oat, you know, bran cookies. I don't know what that. Whatever. Anyways. So what do you do in that situation? So the Shulchan Aruch does have an eitzah. He does have a piece of advice for us. He says that if a person drinks a revius of wine, it's enough. Mishnah Berurah says that you need to have two reviuses. If you're the one making Kiddush, you need to drink two reviuses of wine. But if you have a revius of wine, that should be enough. I'm not going to give you the details. I don't want to ruin it. It wasn't in Los Angeles, but still, I don't have a shul or anything like that, so I never have to make Kiddush for the crowd. But one time I was pushed to make Kiddush for a crowd in a place I was, and there was a crowd of people, and I'm not going to give you the details, but for whatever reason, I couldn't eat the food at the Kiddush. Meaning, I'm happy to tell you it was a halachic issue, but whatever the halachic issue, doesn't matter for us right now. So I wasn't going to eat. So now I was in this awkward situation. I couldn't say no to saying Kiddush. It was impossible. And I was stuck. So there's another issue that I'm skipping as well in this situation, which made it more fun. But let's just skip to the end. So I didn't know what to do. So what I did was I did what the Mishnah Berurah recommends, which is that Rabbi Akiva Eiger doesn't like this, sadly, but the Mishnah Berurah recommends that the Shulchan Aruch recommends that if a person can't eat mizonos, hamotzi, anything like that, so if they drink a revius of wine, they're yotze kiddush malkum suda. So I made kiddush, I gulped down the wine, and they probably thought I was an alcoholic, but for some reason allergic to the food they served, whatever, they thought it was weird. But I drank a lot of wine, and I was the one who was making kiddush. I had to drink two reviuses of wine, according to the Mishnah Berurah, and in that way I was hopeful that I was yotze the mitzvah of kiddush and kiddush malkum suda. Rav Shechter, I think, agreed with me afterwards. I told him the story after Shabbos. There was another detail that was questionable, so that's why it's not so clear. But he said that it was a good idea. Happens to be Rabbi Akiva Eiger disagrees. Rabbi Akiva Eiger doesn't like this. Drinking a revius of wine, he's not into it. He thinks that's based on a Shulchan Aruch that we reject. So the Mishnah Berurah says that we could rely on it. Lichatchila, we should be machmir. We shouldn't do this wine thing. But you're stuck. You know, you're a celiac and there's no food for you. Or you're me and you're stuck at this Kiddush and you can't embarrass yourself and not have. Right. So in a b'diavad case, you could rely on this Shulchan Aruch. So that's okay. So every Shabbos, the gluten-free person, the celiac, has to deal with this issue. But we're dealing with it specifically on Pesach night because matzah must be made of these products, of the five grains, of Chamesh Shesmini Dagan. So what are they supposed to do? So again, so if the person isn't going to get, you have to start the first way to answer the question is to direct, what's the issue over here? Are they going to have a stomach ache? Are they going to have a headache? Are they going to have serious issues that last a week? Are they going to have serious issues that last a year? Are they going to have issues that prop up in a year? And it's like, you have to ask all these questions to a doctor and a rabbi and see what the situation is. But imagine it's a case where technically speaking, they'd be putter. So what do they do? So if you look in the bolded paragraph over here, amnam lich ora nireh. So Rabbi Usher Weiss takes off his hat and puts on his, what's it called?
Stethoscope.
And he says, it's not such a big deal to have a kezias or two of matzah. Even if you're a celiac, if you have a kezias, a little bit of matzah, not such a big deal. No, it's not such a big deal. Happens to be, that's probably true in many situations of celiacs, and probably many celiacs that we know eat matzah at the Seder, because they have a little bit, and maybe they do get a stomach ache, but it's not that big of a deal. But there are going to be situations in which you can't have any. There are people who are just totally allergic. They can't really have it. They'll be in so much pain.
But having a little bit, you won't be able to say
So a kazayas, that's what he says, a kazayas. Meaning kazayas matzah by matzah and a kazayas matzah by afikomen. What's a kazayas? That also he says at the end of the tshuva. Usually we assume a kazayas is about the size of this table, right? That's what we usually assume. For the celiac who's eating a little bit of matzah, you can make all that a kazayas is more around like the size of your palm. Something small. Something contemporary, maybe a contemporary olive, but you have to figure it out by weight. So that's why the palm is like crunched up. Yeah. So that's what Rosh Hashanah says over here. Then he says, Befrat yesh baruch Hashem, bashuk, matzos miuchados mikusmin o shiboles shual lecholim eila. I don't know if, how much, I guess you do find kusmin as well, but the one I want to focus on, shiboles shual. What is shiboles shual? No, shiboles, I think kusmin is. Shiboles shual is? Oats. Shiboles shual. So you find a lot of oat matzahs, and you do find that nowadays, a lot of oat matzahs. Why is oat matzahs helpful? It's one of the grains also. It doesn't have, or at least it has very, very, very low gluten, or some oats have and some oats don't. This is a major discussion in science and just research. The ones in England don't, and the ones in America do. English oats
wheat flour that does not have gluten.
Right, they can extract it like chemically at this point. Right, exactly. So, but oats, you know, generally speaking, had a low gluten content or no gluten content at all. And maybe, therefore, those matzahs are very expensive, by the way. But although maybe the price went down in the last few years, I don't know, but it definitely used to be. I mean, regular matzahs are expensive too. Right, exactly. It's not such a big deal. But so they're expensive matzahs, but there's also two basic objections and one very, very fundamental objection to oat matzahs. The first basic objection is the Ramah says that even though the five grains are technically okay, we avoid everything but wheat. The reason being that we're not expert in the chimutz process and how things leaven outside of wheat. So if we're using oats, we don't know how fast it's going to become bread, and you have to be concerned. We've basically done away with that because we do have really good research on oats now. They make these oat matzahs very professionally in laboratories. They've done a really good job. So we're not really concerned about chimutz. And anyways, a celiac can rely on going against that minug based on the Mishnah Berurah. But someone without celiac, therefore, would not want to do that. Correct. The second objection that people have, that the post can bring to this, is that we assume that the product, the grain product that you use to make matzah, has to be something which can become chametz. It can't become chametz. We can't allow it to become chametz. But it fundamentally has to be able to become chametz. We have to have something which can be chametz that we stop short of becoming chametz in order to be matzah. Oats initially can become chametz. However, in order to store them, they would just like become so spoiled so quickly, they dry heat them, or I don't know, they do something to them to preserve them. And when they heat them like that, they take away the ability to become chametz anymore. And so that might, it's a machlokes we've shown them, but that might ruin their ability to be matzah as well. That, again, is a question, and nowadays it's not as much of an issue because these geniuses, Rabbanim, who had to solve things for celiacs, along with laboratory specialists, found ways to make oats and save them without, you know, if you're motivated to keep mitzvahs, you'll be able to find medical and scientific breakthroughs as well. They found ways to preserve the oats without dry heating them. So you really do have oat masses that are perfectly okay, according to both those things, nowadays. The more fundamental issue, and we're going to not get into this, it is a controversy, and I'd rather spend a lot of time on it, but we're running out of time over here. Within the last bunch of years, many years, there was a discovery, so to speak, or just someone observed, that it's really questionable whether the whole idea of shiboles shual means oats in the first place. It's a mesorah. It's a tradition. It's a Kabbalah that we have all the way back from the Rishonim, that shiboles shual refers to oats. Absolutely, it's in Rashi. It's clear. However, Dr. Yehuda Felix made this famous. He was a Bar Ilan University professor. He wrote like this book, Flora and Fauna in Talmud. Really interesting, right? He came and he sort of questioned the definition of Shibola Shual as oats. There were many different issues with it. One of them is that oats didn't really exist in Eretz Yisrael in the time of the Mishnah, so it's hard to imagine they were talking about that. Additionally, they have very different characteristics, physical makeup. Shibola Shual is called that way because it means a fox's tail. So think of like wheat, it looks like a tail, right? Oats don't look like a tail. They don't look like that. So it's hard to say that it means that based on that. They also don't contain gluten, as we said before, which is different than all the other four grains. So he raised some serious issues with defining shiboles shual as oats, and therefore the possibility was raised that oats are not actually mizonos, they're not hamotzi, they can't be used for matzah. It makes a big difference. Your Cheerios would be ha'adama, right? It makes a very big difference. Now, almost all of the poskim rejected this out of hand. There are firmer and more nicer ways of pushing it at hand. Some of them just said, I think the words some of them used were, he discovered this through dubious scientific methods. Like they didn't accept the whole idea of the scientific research. Others said, no, he's right, but we have a masar, we have a tradition. Your scientific discovery may be correct scientifically, but it can't undo so many years of Jewish tradition. We know what oats are, and we know that it's one of the... I happen not to remember because it's so... I don't know. Good question. I don't remember, or I never looked. Yeah. Yeah, right. I really hope not. Yeah. So there are different ways of saying it. Like I said, I will point out to you that my Rebbe Rav Shechter Shlita, first of all, he reports that when they showed this to the Rav, Kahati Mishnayos, that version of Mishnayos, the edition, I think he quoted this idea from Dr. Felix, that Shibboleth Shul might mean oats, but hey, it might not, we're not sure. And apparently the Rav slammed the sefer down on the table in anger. He was so upset, and he said, it's impossible to say such a thing. You can't go against Masorah. He says that about Tchelas also. I won't tell you if I'm wearing Tchelas or not, but he says that about Tchelas also, that you can't tell me you found the Tchelas. We don't have Tchelas, that's a Masorah, that's a Kabbalah. It doesn't matter if science says differently. We have a tradition. So this is an important debate. It happens to be Rav Shechter and Rav Willig, at least back in the day, he may have changed since then, I don't know, but they both were concerned about this. And they wouldn't therefore tell you that someone who eats oats matzahs, they're definitely not yotze, or someone definitely can't make hamotzi or mazonos on oats, but they definitely tried their hardest to avoid it. So like you said before, someone who's not a celiac certainly should be staying away from oats. Or someone who is a celiac and can handle a kezayis of matzah, like we said before, should have a kezayis of matzah, as opposed to having this oat matzah, because it is a little bit questionable, at least. Again, we're quoting two posts against many, but it's at least questionable whether the oat matzah is legitimate in that way. And there were the two other issues. Correct. It would be better to have a smaller shear of wheat matzah than to do this. But that being said, if a person was stuck, they'd ask the rabbi and see if the oat matzah is, if they agree to it. It is seemingly a solution for some people. At least Rav Asher Weiss certainly thinks it's good enough. But Rav Asher also suggested to us, again, a smaller shear, a smaller kezayis. It has to be kezayis, but a smaller kezayis of matzah would be preferable to that. If you look at the end of the tshuva, Rav Asher just says that, it's an important thing to realize, is that if you're going to eat one kezayis of matzah, we would think, when should you eat it? We think motzi matzah, when everyone else is eating matzah. Really not. You should do magid, you should do the meal, and you should have that matzah at the end of the Seder. Because ein maftir and achar matzah afikamin, after Pesach afikamin. You can't have anything after you have the matzah. So first eat your meal, then later you'll make your bracha and have the matzah, and then you'll last through the night having had the matzah as the last thing. So, people should be healthy. We should all be healthy, not be sick, and in so doing, we should be in kind of mitzvahs of the Seder and all the mitzvahs that come are incumbent upon us throughout the year. And the mitzvahs should really result in a bracha of the chayba, that they should give us life, not chas v'shalom, the opposite. Everyone have a wonderful day.